exactly.
I have this for myself.
Can I open the House meeting on House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities? Please come to order. Today, we are first going to have an informational meeting about the Governor's Natural Resource Advisor and to talk about the Western Oregon Plan revision. We've got some public comment. My friend Representative Hannah's here. We'll get him up here first after you let Mike talk for a while. Then we've got a couple other folks. We've got some bills. Part of this process I learned early was sometimes you got to put a bill on the agenda before people finally realize that they may have an issue with it and should read it. So we've got amendments apparently out there, so we're not going to be moving one of them at least. And the other one, I think we're still waiting on something. 2213 down at the bottom successfully got the Ways and Means referral taken off, and we'll see if there's issues or amendments. I don't think there's going to be any, but we'll find out, I guess. So we may actually get to move our first bill today. But first, we're going to spend, I would say at least half an hour or more on Western Oregon Plan Revision. So let's get right into it. Welcome.
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Michael Carrier. I'm Governor Kulongoski's Natural Resources Policy Director. It's a very great pleasure for me to be here this morning to talk to you about the Governor's position on the Western Oregon Plan revision. He's been deeply involved in it. And I want to start my remarks about that. This will take just a few minutes, 10 or 15 minutes, to give you an overview of where he's been and where he is currently. But I want to start by going back to 2002, because this was a point at which Governor Kulongoski really got my attention about his understanding and his passion for natural resource issues. And that was just after his election in 2002. He delivered the keynote speech at the Oregon Business Summit and outlined the 10 or 12 major priorities that he intended to pursue in the course of his administration. And he spoke as one of those principles or issues that he was going to take on as a priority about this very issue of management of our federal forest lands. And I want to read just quickly from the letter or from the speech that he gave that day, as I referred to it many times. And he says, "As for better management of our forests, there's a great deal I could say about this too. For example, although I want to build a strong state-federal partnership, I consider this issue that cries out for states' rights. The Oregon Department of Forestry is one of the nation's leaders in applying principles of sustainability to resource-based economies. In other words, we know what we are doing. We understand how to reduce the chances of catastrophic fire and manage our natural resources in a way that protects Oregon's rural economies. And today, I will be in Southern Oregon to review the impact of last summer's forest fires. Because the Board of Forestry, led by then-Chair Howard Sohn of the Board of Forestry, who is on my transition team, Oregon is a national leader in healthy forest practices. We'll take this model to Washington, D.C. and demand that the federal government improve its management practices, allowing responsible harvesting of timber in a manner that reduces susceptibility to costly forest fires." That was the first time sitting in that audience that I realized the governor felt very passionately about this issue, and he had a clear vision about what he was going to do over the next 8 years. I didn't realize at that time that 2 years later I'd be joining his staff as his Natural Resources Policy Advisor. When I did, the very first conversation we had was about his vision on how we interact with the federal government on managing these federal forest lands and about the loss of sustainable and predictable supplies of timber off these lands for our rural communities and our rural economies that have no other viable alternative but that resource dependence that was a legacy of their development. In 2004, the governor went before the Board of Forestry. And because he had said in 2002 he wanted the board to take leadership in this. And heretofore, the Board of Forestry and the Department of Forestry had focused really only on private forest land management and state forest land management. In that speech, he asked the Board of Forestry to expand its vision, to expand its role, and in partnership with the department, begin to advise him on these federal forest land policies. That led to the creation of a group, a very diverse group of stakeholders by the board, called the Federal Forest Land Advisory Committee. That committee just wrapped up over 2 years' worth of analysis and work on on the federal land issues and prepared a set of recommendations that the Board of Forestry recently adopted and has now forwarded to the governor for his consideration.
Mike, just FYI, we had State Forester come in and give us that report, so we've all seen it. Thank you.
Excellent. In December 2005, Governor Kulongoski was the first governor in the country to sign on as a cooperator with the Bureau of Land Management for a revision of one of their resource management plans, and that was the WOPR, the Western Oregon Plan Revision. Signing on as a cooperator gave him special standing as a partner with the BLM, and it gave him a special role, along with 10 state natural resource agencies that also signed on as cooperators, and assisting in the preparation of that plan. From early 2006 through late 2007, those 10 agencies worked as cooperators with the BLM to draft the draft version of the Western Oregon Plan. That resulted in the issuance of a draft environmental impact statement and the draft plan and a comment period. Toward the end of that comment period, in January of 2008, the governor issued comments on the draft plan and chose, rather than to get down into the details of the plan, to advise the Bureau that when he reviewed the final plan, that he would do it according to 12 co-equal principles. And let me explain for a minute what that final review is. Under the BLM's planning rules, they're required to submit any proposed final plan to the governor of the state where the plan will be adopted, and allow the governor an opportunity to do a consistency review to determine if the plan is consistent with state or local plans, programs, and policies. And the governor advised the Bureau in January of 2008 that when he did that consistency review, he was going to apply 12 co-equal principles, and I'll run through those very quickly. He wanted to be sure that the final plan could be implemented with adequate leadership within the Bureau and the human and financial resources committed to implementing that plan by the federal government. He wanted to assure that the final plan was supported with a robust program of monitoring for effectiveness of implementation of the plan, along with research and adaptive management strategies. He wanted predictable, and this is very important, he wanted to assure that the plan increased timber harvest and included predictability, certainty, and sustainability of those harvests, along with other non-timber values that contribute to the economic stability of the Oregon and California counties of Oregon. He wanted the plan to fully comply with the Federal Endangered Species Act and to go beyond this compliance and aid in the recovery, as well as complement state strategies that were underway for the recovery of ESA-listed species. He wanted to ensure that the riparian management strategies and best management practices that maintain water quality and habitat for salmonids and other species were in place, and that the plan complied with the Clean Water Act. He wanted the plan to support the Oregon Conservation Strategy adopted by the Fish and Wildlife Commission. He wanted the plan to also support the Oregon Coast Coho Conservation Plan that we've been working hard on. He had a principle regarding large mammals and big game animals and the need for the plan to support strategies that ODFNW was working toward for those species. And I won't go into the others, but there were a few other issues that I would consider not less important, but not as noteworthy as the ones I just mentioned. So those 12 principles were laid down in January of 2008 as the benchmark against which he would evaluate the final plan. So in October of 2008, the Bureau of Land Management issued its final environmental impact statement and proposed final plan, and that began the governor's 60-day consistency review. In December, the governor offered his review to the Bureau, and he cited several areas of concern about the plan. He did not see the commitment or the assurance that the Bureau or the federal government could commit the resources, the leadership, and the staff, and the budget to implement this plan, and he wanted to see more of a commitment. He was not satisfied with the monitoring that was committed to in the plan because it was more oriented to monitoring as to whether actions occurred prescribed in the plan, not as to the effect of those actions. He expressed a concern. Back up. He embraced the proposed harvest volume expressed in the plan of 502 million board feet. He expressed serious concern about the approach the Bureau had taken in its compliance with the Endangered Species Act. And let me explain why. When the Bureau began working with the plan, both the Fish and Wildlife Service and the National Marine Fisheries Service signed on as cooperators along with the state and other agencies. The Bureau expressed a commitment up through the draft environmental impact statement that it would complete ESA consultation with the two services. Just before the final plan was published, the Bureau issued a letter to the two services terminating that consultation and advising that it would be consultation project by project, harvest by harvest, once the plan was implemented. This caused the governor great concern for several reasons. One, he believed that this wasn't compliant with the Endangered Species Act. Two, the Bureau had signed an MOA with the services in 2000 committing to completing consultation on these very kinds of plans. And three, these plans of this scale, large landscape scale, both the Forest Service and the Bureau had done this kind of consultation and completed this kind of consultation for the Northwest Forest Plan. And what the governor saw here was a real vulnerability on the part of the Bureau to legal challenges on this plan, and that, in fact, is what has occurred. There was a legal challenge before the plan was even completed by AFRC in Washington District Court over the decision to terminate consultation and pick it up again later during the implementation of the plan. And now, since the record of decision for this plan has been signed, there have been several 60-day notices issued by environmental organizations intending to sue in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in this district on the same issue. The governor made comments in his letter of concern or his letter of consistency review to riparian strategies, an issue regarding the Wild Rogue Wilderness Area, or proposed wilderness area that he has advocated for, certain recreation conflicts that might arise through the implementation of this plan, and one very important issue to him, the issue of climate change. He was not content that the plan really addressed the monitoring and adaptation strategies related to rapid climate change that he had asked them to look at when he issued his 12 principles. He closed his letter of review by asking for three things: that the Bureau allow additional comment on the plan, which is provided for in their planning rules, that the governor identifies issues that were not addressed in the draft environmental impact statement. He asked that they delay signing the record of decision for this plan so it would not be immediately subjected to legal challenges. And he asked for time to allow him to work with our congressional delegation and the new Obama administration to garner support and interest in this plan. In response to his review, he received a letter from both the Bureau of Land Management State Director, Ed Shepard, and from the Assistant Secretary of the Interior. Shepard offered many comments in response to the concerns that he had raised and even identified some new commitments they would make in implementing the plan. The Assistant Secretary's letter basically said to the governor, you did not conduct a valid consistency review, and therefore we do not feel obligated to act on the recommendations that you have made. And, oh, by the way, your administrative appeal rights under our planning rule are extinguished, and we're signing the record of decision. It goes without saying the governor took great offense to that response. His goal here was really to work with the Bureau and adopt a plan that would be free of conflict and controversy and that could actually be implemented. And I know there have been some representations and even some headlines which, you know, along the lines of governor opposes logging, governor opposes the Western Oregon plan revision. Those are completely inaccurate. The governor has strongly supported the adoption and revision of this plan. This is more of a political issue than it is an issue of policy at this point. He feels strongly that if this plan is going to get traction with the new administration and the new Congress, that we really need to take some time and build some support, and we certainly need to resolve the legal challenges that are out there now, which could, in fact, be administratively resolved by the Bureau of Land Management. I want to just close by reading from the governor's recent letter, because what he did, he was forced, when they extinguished the appeal that was afforded to him under this consistency review, there was another appeal avenue that he had to take this back to the administration and ask them to take a second look. And so on January 29th, the governor filed, under the Federal Administrative Procedures Act, an administrative appeal to the Bureau over the interpretation that the state director and the assistant secretary applied to their own planning rule. And the issue here is, in their planning rule, they said that his review must be confined to reviewing the plan for consistency with state or locally adopted natural resource-related plans. That is not what their rule says. Their rule says that his review is to be regarding consistency with state or local plans, programs, and priorities. So we don't agree with their interpretation of the rule and their foreclosure of his right for further appeal, but more importantly, we certainly don't agree with the decision to go ahead as they did and sign the records of decision associated with this plan and trigger the lawsuits that are now occurring. In his administrative appeal that he filed to the acting director of the BLM in Washington, he says the following: I've stated many times before I do not want a new comment period or an extension of time to finalize the record of decision to be viewed as reasons to sidetrack this plan. The commitment of time and resources to this planning process by both state and federal agencies has been considerable. That's why I signed a cooperating agency memorandum of agreement with you in December of 2005. More importantly, our efforts have shown that state and federal agencies can work effectively together and in good faith to advance plans for better management of our federal forest lands. I want to build on these efforts, not abandon them. I think we can agree that the national interest and the state's interests are both served by finalizing a plan that can be implemented free of legal challenges and deliver sustainable harvest yields. The current plan does not meet that goal. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
One moment. Thank you, Mike. Thank you for coming in. We're going to have some questions from the committee in a moment, but you know, we've talked about this, you and I. Others have talked to you about it from this committee and other sectors. You know, the key thing under the sort of trust but verify theory is that the sentence that said the governor supports this plan and its implementation, he has some concerns about, you know, process, but I want this committee and the executive branch in full unison going forward, and that's the point of trying to have you in today. And we ask the questions that we need to ask to get there, but the bottom line is, I'm going to hand out a sheet, which I'll get you to, and it's a sheet of what's happening, please, under essentially under the Secure Rural Schools payments, how those you know, barely obviously got funded and how they go down from here, and then by county dollar figures of what the record of decision on the Whopper would replace. So you can look at each county and see that these are the actual receipts in the first column, then what the Secure Rural Schools would pay in 08, and the last column is what the Western Oregon Plan revision would end up providing to the counties. It's not 100% of what Secure Rural Schools is, but it's going away, so 100% should not be our goal. So that's something to look at. I know folks are going to have questions. I just have a couple. On the ESA issue particularly, given that has already been challenged now by, as you mentioned, two environmental organizations. You know, I know there's a difference of opinion about whether you do ESA at a big broad scale in the plan or you try and do it on individual sale levels, you know, when you actually can identify owls that are out there or something versus a broad plan. Do you think we could agree that at this point, since the courts are going to be taking that part up, that we don't have to sort of debate that on a political level and we'll see what the courts say about that issue? And we can instead talk about some of the public process issues and things.
Well, that's one alternative. We could agree on that we could leave that to the courts to decide. I think there's a high chance, and I'm just being speculative here, but I think there's a high chance that, based on the history of this, that the courts may well simply direct the agency to go back and complete the consultation, which further delays the implementation of this plan. The other alternative would be for the new administration to direct the Bureau to go back and complete the consultation now, which has the potential to moot out the litigation and actually save time in the long run. This is going to be resolved one way or the other, either by the courts through the torturous process they sometimes go through and the appeals that ensue resolving this, or the administration taking more swift action and resolving it by directing the agency to go back and complete the consultation. I think regarding ESA, you pointed out very succinctly the problem of trying to evaluate effects on a broad landscape scale versus, and there are problems trying to evaluate project by project because you don't consider the cumulative effects when you do that. I think the way to do this is you do the broad landscape scale cumulative effects analysis now to the extent that the services can and the Bureau can work together and come up with a biological opinion about that and include with that a commitment to do an effects analysis project by project.
Well, and I'm certainly, obviously, we don't get to make the decision here at the Oregon Legislature on this, but for what we are making a to-do for our congressional folks, and one of the things we want to be able to do is give strategies on how to get this thing implemented. And so I think, you know, we can talk more about this as a committee, but I think that the whatever's quicker would be what my murderer's row over here would generally come up with as a solution. So why don't we let some other folks ask questions? I've got more, but I don't want to dominate the whole thing. And I'm sure Representative Shoffler would like to lead off.
And Mr. Chair, thank you. And I don't feel well, and after Mike responds, I'm going to go lay down. I'm just here because I have to vote today and to talk to you. You know, I don't know, Mike. I maybe I'm missing something. I've been 6 years in this building in a five-year process and state agencies on just this issue. You know, I don't see support. I don't see cooperation. I don't see sincerity, to be quite frank with you. I think the governor's a decent man. I would trust him with my wife and daughter's life because he's a good man. I think he's mistaken or misled or misinformed or all the above. You know, I see delay, obstruction, prevention, denial. Getting in the way, not just your office, but other legislators, other state elected officials, some in our federal delegation, are getting in the way of this. Liquid natural gas terminals and pipelines, water development all around the state, especially the Columbia. Let me see. And they're not putting their shoulders to the wheel. I don't see any support for these wind generation farms that have absolutely, totally coincide with everything the governor's talking about. I do not see a real effort to support siting those. These people have one outfit left the state or helping site transmission lines to transmit this green, emission-free energy. You know, I don't know who, maybe I'm not alone in this. I'm glad I wrote this down because I'm not very happy. I'm not alone. I'm not the only Democrat that feels this way. We are going to give up, turn our nose up at thousands, maybe tens of thousands of jobs in this economic climate. That's what I see happening right now. And you don't talk to the constituents that parade into my office wanting more money for services. And I've talked to people that are going to lose their job, minimum wage jobs. They don't have anything if they lose these jobs, and they aren't going to continue to provide the services to the most vulnerable, seniors, children, a long list of people that need our help. And it is just criminal to sit on our hands and ask for more time, more consultation, more alternatives, more study, more litigation. It's time to vote, Mr. Kerry, yes or no. And God bless you. I wish you well.
I think that was rhetorical.
I'll listen to your response before I go because I'm going to go. I'm tired. I've got to vote. That's the only reason I'm here.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Shoffler, I just want to say a part of that. I was thinking, welcome to my world, because while I don't deal with the constituents in here on a regular basis, the real human impacts, the people that parade through my office are those on all sides of this issue. You know, I sometimes feel like we have the rein in one hand and the bit in the other. You know, the governor has been very aggressive about proposing and supporting legislation that expands our economy by offering business energy tax credits for renewable, like wind, like solar, like wave energy. we are aggressively promoting those, but at the same time, we have state and federal responsibilities and laws that have to be met regarding environmental impacts and other issues. And while the representative's perception is that the governor is a roadblock, I'm here to say this is the very, very difficult job that the governor and the executive branch has of balancing, you know, our desire to promote, you know, the economy, new technologies, renewables, all of these things, but at the same time deal with the environmental footprint these has and the people who are more focused on that than they are on the expansion of the business opportunity. It's a tough balance, and I know you share that tension that I feel, and you share that frustration.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, excuse myself.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you, Mike. So I think, you know, we have a couple more questions, and then I want to hear, we've got several members here, and we've got a couple members of the public that want to testify as well. So anything else at the moment? You can feel free to question members of the public, too, or get Representative Hanna up here, and you can try and grill him, too, and see how that does. Okay. Thank you, Mike.
Mr. Chair, thank you, and I will be sure to thank Representative Schauffler because I felt like that was a fairly light touch this morning.
Mr. Chair, are we dismissing the witness?
For the moment, yeah, unless you want to, would you like to ask a question now?
Well, I didn't.
Just please.
I was going to wait. I thought some other members might have questions. Mr. Carrier, I just don't think there's any plan that extreme environmentalists aren't going to take to court. So I think the idea that we're going to come up with a plan that's going to save us time from having to battle in court doesn't have any basis in historical fact. I haven't seen any plan that doesn't ultimately have to make its way through court. The other thing I'd say is, you know, results matter. And you started out your speech today, your comments, by suggesting that the governor places a high priority on rural communities and natural resources. He's been in office for 6 years. You know, are we harvesting more trees? Have we produced more natural resource jobs in the state since he took office? You know, we can sit around and talk and give speeches all the time. That's easy to do. But people in these counties have been hearing speeches and talk for a long time. And the unemployment level is already in double digits. You know, for a lot of people in rural areas of Oregon, they never really did experience the good economic times of the last 10 years that the metro area had. I think that the unemployment area in rural areas of Oregon is headed towards 20%. And, you know, I just want to echo Representative Schauffler's comments. I don't believe that the people of rural Oregon have a champion in the governor's office. And, you know, it's not just him. I mean, I think that there's failing throughout this building and leadership in Oregon. I think that the people of rural Oregon are not being served. They're not being served. And we see this now as these federal payments are evaporating. Congress is basically kind of looking for places to cut, and these payments don't make a lot of sense, I think, from the federal perspective, because they replaced economic activity. And the only thing that is going to replace them as they go away, as they get phased out, these federal payments, is economic activity. And, you know, obviously I support the Whopper, but it's about more than just the Whopper. I mean, this is just a start. You know, these communities are there. They exist to be resource communities. And as I've said in previous hearings, you know, it's not about preserving these forests. You know, they're living things. They're going to die of either disease or they're going to burn up in fires. You know, there is a way to manage these forests and to have a resource economy and to have, you know, all the recreation and everything else we want, too. We've been doing this for decades. And, again, just to echo Representative Schauffler again, we are talking about tens of thousands of jobs. Right now, what's going on right now in this country is we're losing 20,000 jobs a day. 20,000 jobs a day in this country, and Oregon's getting its fair share of that. And, you know, it is hard as a legislator to come to a hearing like this and believe that when it's over in an hour and a half that nothing's really going to change. People like the governor, not just him, but others in the delegation, but people in leadership have to start standing up for rural Oregon. And it means confronting some other people in our community that don't have their best interests at heart. And I would just implore you to move past talk.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to respond to that. Representative Wingard, I want you to hang on to the last thing you said rather than the first thing you said, because the first thing you said about believing that there is no way to get past this gridlock of litigation and opposition between the environmental community and others over managing these federal lands reflects a hopelessness that I hope you didn't intend, because we've got to look, quit looking in the rearview mirror at what we've experienced in the last 25 years on federal forest land management and rural community impacts, and look at the future. And I assure you, the governor, having represented the Junction City area, having worked as a labor attorney, representing thousands of workers whose livelihood depended on the forest products industry 20, 30 years ago, watching those jobs dry up, he feels that as deeply as anybody. And I will tell you, he cares as passionately about our rural residents and our rural communities as much as anybody does. With regard to what is there in the future we can do, you know, we can't expect the Congress to roll back the ESA protections or the National Environmental Policy Act, or to roll back the rights of citizens to have their day in court when they feel aggrieved by the actions of the government. That's just not going to happen. It's not realistic. And many would advocate for that as a solution. It's not the solution. The solution is actually being played on the landscape now, and the governor's participated in some of those. Organizations like Sustainable Northwest or Willauer Resources working in our rural communities to build collaboration among environmental groups, among timber companies, with the federal agencies, with state agencies working in partnership with them, to resolve these issues up front rather than waiting until the federal agency acts and then we start the appeal and the litigation process, is the model that we're looking at. And I know you've been briefed on the Federal Forest Land Advisory Committee recommendations, but at the core of that is that model of there's a new way to do business on these federal lands to get the wood out, frankly, to get the health of these forests improved, to reduce the fire risk, to produce local rural economy. And that model is that we sit down with all the parties at the beginning of the process and come to agreement about what these projects should look like and then implement them. And there's a great opportunity right now in the federal stimulus package. There are hundreds of millions of dollars available to the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management, much of which I hope will be directed to Oregon, that will provide funds for forest health, fuels treatment, wildlife habitat, decommissioning of old forest roads. And there are funds in there for cost-sharing partnership with state and local governments to assist the agencies to build collaboration up front rather than waiting to resolve it through conflict at the end. Yesterday, or the day before yesterday, State Forester Marvin Brown and I met with the state director of Bureau of Land Management, Ed Shepard, and the new regional forester, Mary Wagner, to talk to them about the FFAC recommendations and the governor's desire to work with them through the stimulus package to resolve many of these conflicts out there up front so we can get these projects going and get those dollars spent and get those jobs created.
Thank you. I'm just going to have one more question, then I want to get to our members who are here waiting and I'm sure have schedules. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for being here, Mr. Carrier. I want to make sure I understand the schedule. Are you going to leave us now after this little part? Are you staying on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Gilliam, I'm here at your disposal for as long as you need me.
Then I would just say this. If you're going to stay, I'll be very brief because there are members in the room here and members to my right and left who can articulate much better than I can the seriousness of our rural counties. You've indicated that you certainly are aware of it and you've been working on it, but I feel very strongly that you need to listen to this. So if you're going to stay in the room, I'll withhold mine because there are going to be some very articulate folks about hurting counties. I represent Marion and Clackamas, but there's some folks who represent some folks that are hurting even worse. So I'll withhold if you're going to stay.
Okay. Thank you. So for the moment.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Hannah, Senator, yeah, go ahead and come up. Representative Gilman, just watching? Okay, great. Am I missing any members? I think I've seen them all. Representative Hannah, welcome to our committee.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, colleagues. I appreciate the opportunity to come and visit with you. I appreciate Representative Gilliam's announcement that this is a serious matter, and I think I saw that from Representative Schaffler. For the record, I'm Bruce Hanna, a state representative from House District 7, literally the heart of Oregon's timber-growing country. In December of 2008, the Bureau of Land Management approved six resource management plans that were developed under what we're discussing as the Western Oregon Plan Revision. I think it's interesting to point out that over the period of time that this has been worked on, no fewer than 10 state agencies have been actively engaged in this process, the planning, the studies, and all of those things. And yet we continue to see a pushback when we've engaged those folks and tried to meet all the requirements. The plan as it's been developed would guide the management of 2.2 million acres of timberland in western Oregon, much of which lies in Douglas and Lane counties. The plan allows for an estimated harvest of 502 million board feet of timber per year. This is an 87% increase over the Northwest Forest Plan. But for those who are listening, be sure to hear that it is also less than half of the annual growth on those very lands. Yes, it's an increase of 87%, but still represents less than half of the annual growth on those lands. Approximately 65% of that harvest level is expected to be part of what would be a vigorous thinning program within those lands, thereby lessening the opportunity for catastrophic fires, as we have seen in Oregon, thereby lessening the opportunity for one of those fires, which we all know can be Oregon's number one carbon emitter. More than every car burning gas today, one catastrophic fire in Oregon creates more carbon emission than all of them combined. This can help us with that. The sales are estimated to provide for $75 million for distribution to the counties, and Representative Clem has provided that information. This is approximately 85% of the average annual BLM payments over the last 20 years to those O&C counties. We've talked about this being a job issue. This harvest provides thousands upon thousands of jobs, and specifically is very helpful to rural counties. In addition to jobs created, as I mentioned, this promotes forest health. We heard Mr. Carrier, I think, effectively sidestep Representative Wingard's question. Has the governor's office created more or are there less natural resource jobs in Oregon? Despite what has been said about vigorous promotion, there are less. If you ask some of the 170,000 unemployed Oregonians today who once worked in this industry where they are, you'd know that. If you ask the 9,700 newly unemployed Oregonians over the month of December how that worked for them, they'd answer that as well, because many of those jobs were related to timber. If you ask what five counties are the highest unemployment rate counties in Oregon, you'd also find that each of them happens to be an O&C county. There's certainly no accident there, and the facts certainly point to natural resource job growth hasn't happened. We've lost jobs and continue to do so at an alarming rate. We do have an opportunity. If you take it closer to home, in Douglas and Lane counties, we are near 13% unemployment. Douglas County has teetered between the third and fourth highest unemployment rate in the state of Oregon. And each of those O and C counties far exceed the national average. Under the plan created under Whopper, as an example, Roseburg's BLM district would be allowed 69 million board feet of harvest. You know, we can talk about transportation and we can talk about school funding, but if you don't talk about timber harvest, you're certainly missing the mark. In rural Oregon and O&C counties, if you want to have a conversation about transportation, you cannot do so without having a conversation about timber receipts from O&C lands, because we built the roads that are there using that. If you applied the same model closely to state-owned forests, likely we would not have the conversation we are today about school funding. This is an issue larger than simply O&C lands. This is an issue about, are we willing to find a plan that works for Oregonians, that takes advantage of our natural resource base? The resulting jobs associated with the increased timber harvest would provide economic boost, not just to Douglas and Lane counties, but across the state of Oregon. I'm very appreciative to be here this morning and that this committee has chosen to hear comments both from members and the public. I'm here to encourage this committee, the body that we work in, and the governor's office not to talk about, but to fully support and promote harvest as planned for in the Western Oregon Plan Revision. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hanna. Senator Boquist, welcome to your former haunts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Brian Boquist. I represent Senate District 12. That's portions of six rural counties. Special greetings to Representative Van Ortman and Representative Wingard, who I've not served with in this chamber we're sitting on over here. And a special greeting to the former chair of the Ag Committee and the existing chair. I come for two particular reasons. One is to express my district's opinion and then to represent other members of the Senate who, of course, can't be here, and my own chair is going to be chewing my posterior because I'm not in his committee here shortly. So I will be brief based on previous discussions. I would like to preface my comments with I think as the next 2 to 4 or 6 weeks go on, outside of the activities of this committee and the sister committee, which I serve on in the other chamber, we're going to come to realize that the recession or depression we're in is going to change the entire way we deal with bureaucracy and how we operate in the state of Oregon and in the nation. And I think this is as good a place as any to start right here. I would say, Mr. Chair, that every delay of the implementation of the existing plan that has been hammered out is a delay that hurts the entire state of Oregon. The second thing I would say is that every delay of the implementation of this plan increases the liability we, both senators and representatives, have to the counties that are impacted. Even in a perfect world, we have a $60 million shortfall in the services in those counties if this plan were implemented today. And in many of my counties, which most are O&C counties, the effective unemployment rate exceeds 18%. Mr. Chair, you and I have discussed the concerns I have with this plan in private. I respect your opinion, and so therefore I won't raise some of those concerns and some of those opinions. However, like Representative Schaffler, I do have serious concerns that have been undertaken, or serious concerns in the actions undertaken by the governor. My mother once told me, if you can't say anything good about somebody, don't say it. And while I respect the governor, I simply do not trust part of his staff. And I have more reasons than this not to do so. I also think that it's either dishonest or unrealistic to believe that the cavalry is arriving from the federal government in the terms of a stimulus package. We're going to have to pull ourselves up by our own bootstraps. And having said that, Mr. Chair, I fully support your committee's actions to convince the governor and others we need to move forward immediately on this plan. And I would close with a reminder that whatever transpires, this legislative body, both the Senate and the House, need to be prepared to take whatever action is necessary if the executive branch fails to take actions to support our citizens. And there are other actions, Mr. Chair, as you're aware, that we can take. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Always good to see you.
Got two members of the public. If you come up together, that'd be great. Doug Robertson and Jim Geisinger. Got Doug first, Jim second, if that's all right with you fellas. Oh, and he's more than 100 miles, so you would have got to bump Jim anyway. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much, members of the committee. My name is Doug Robertson. I am a county commissioner in Douglas County and also president of the Association of O&C Counties. I'll begin this morning by bringing you greetings from one of your former colleagues, Susan Morgan, who sends her best wishes as you struggle with what is a very challenging legislative session. I've known and worked with Susan for many years and now have the opportunity to call her my colleague, Commissioner Susan Morgan, and she's doing a great job, as you might imagine. Mr. Chairman, this morning I'd like to talk briefly about the plan and then perhaps more specifically on how implementation of the Western Oregon Plan revision affects each one of you in your district, the folks, the communities that you serve, as well as those people in my position in various counties are affected. I'd like to begin by contrasting the development of the Northwest Forest Plan, which was developed in the latter part of 1992, with the development of the Western Oregon Plan revision to give you some perspective on the amount of work and collaboration that went into this plan. As you recall, the Northwest Forest Plan was developed as a result of a legal decision, not unlike the development of the Western Oregon Plan revision, as a result of a decision by Judge William Dwyer in Seattle that basically stopped all forest production after the listing of the spotted owl, with the direction that a plan be developed by the Forest Service and the BLM to protect the spotted owl. That plan was developed. It was developed by four individuals. If you recall, the Gang of Four, Doctors Jerry Franklin, Norm Johnson, John Gordon, and Jack Ward Thomas. They made up the Gang of Four, and they developed the basics of the Northwest Forest Plan. They did it in 90 days, and they did it with no public input. Now, contrast that with the development of the Western Oregon Plan revision. Over a course of 4.5 years involving every major natural resource agency in the federal government, combined with 10 state agencies, tribal interests, and local government, they collaborated to develop what we have before us in the form of the Western Oregon Plan revision. 4.5 years, a very transparent process, over 170 public hearings, inviting the public to come in, to give testimony, to ask questions, and as a result of that public input, many changes and adjustments were made to the plan that you now see before you today, a very transparent process. Many people on both sides, on all sides of the natural resource issues, have taken issue with the Northwest Forest Plan and basically acknowledged its failure. Many people who have taken the time to look at the process that it developed, the Northwest Forest Plan, including some of our federal legislators, have found it very deficient. At the same time, many people who have taken the time to look at the Western Oregon Plan revision have recognized the amount of work and commitment and effort that has been contributed into the development of this plan, including the governor of the state. And we thank Governor Kulongowski for his recognition of the hard work and his commitment of 10 of his departments and dozens of his staff people to work on this plan. We compliment the governor for supporting the ASQ of 502 million feet on an annual basis in this plan. And we hope, and I think have reason to believe, that the governor has chosen not to intervene in the lawsuit that has been discussed earlier relative to consultation. Do we agree with the governor on all parts of his positions? No, we don't. We respectfully disagree on several, the most notable being the issue of consultation. But that's going to be decided in the courts. Please don't think that the resolution of consultation is the end of litigation. It isn't. This plan is going to be litigated from many different perspectives. Our estimate is that it will take a year, perhaps two, to get through the litigation, and we're certainly prepared to defend the BLM in that endeavor. So we're pleased, and I want to thank Mike Carrier and Tim Nesbitt and Marvin Brown the other folks, Kevin Birch, that work so hard as cooperating agencies. This is a state plan as much as it is a federal plan, and that's, I think, why we're so concerned about implementation of the plan as quickly as we can. Now, let me just mention, and you know these figures probably as well or better than most people, but I want to mention a couple of figures to perhaps give a better idea to folks who wonder why we are so concerned about the ONC lands and about the implementation of this plan as it relates to our communities and our constituents. And I'll start, if I might, with Representative Van Orman, who represents District 52, I believe. Had your district received receipts without the safety net, in other words, had your district received actual harvest receipts, you would have received $843,000 in your district. As a result of the safety net, your district received $6,937,000. And if the Whopper is implemented, you would receive nearly $5 million at the end of the four-year period. Representative Wingard, you know these figures, I know, but in your district, without the safety net, you would receive $785,000. With the safety net, $6,457,000. And at the end of the safety net period, with the implementation of the Whopper, $4,635,000. Now, I draw your attention to the last number, I believe,
I
Representative Clem, in the chart that you passed out. And while I risk boring you with all the nuance here, it's very important, and I think underscores the importance of the implementation of this plan. As you know, all of you have national forests within your boundaries, and you receive national forest receipts most recently in the form of the safety net. The national forest receipts, as timber is harvested, the federal government keeps 75% of those receipts and sends 25% to the state. Your body, the state legislature, then determines what percentage of that 25% is spent on roads, and what percent goes to schools. And in Oregon, 75% goes to roads and 25% goes to schools for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is the equalized school funding that we have in this state. The other very important element of that discussion is that those funds are committed. They're dedicated. They can only be spent on roads and bridges in the county road fund and on education. That's why these numbers are so important to you, because these numbers, this money, is discretionary. That's how your counties and your communities run county government. The money that comes from the Whopper, from the ONC safety net at this point, can be used for law enforcement, health and social services, veteran service officers, libraries, whatever your commissioners believe is important. And that's a very important distinction. The other distinction I want to make is that the federal government in 1937 passed the 1937 ONC Act, and that provided for the division of receipts between the federal government and the counties. Now, most of you realize that the way those receipts are split today are 50-50. When timber is harvested on the ONC lands, 50% stays with the federal government and 50% goes to the counties. Well, that's not what the law says. The 1937 Act provides for 75% of the receipts to go to the counties, not 50%. In the early 50s, or actually the latter part of the 1950s, the counties came together and realized the importance of the health and productivity of those ONC lands. So they voluntarily gave up 25% of their 75% to encourage more management on those lands, a plowback fund, if you will. And it worked very well. So since 1956, the counties have received not 75%, but 50%. But the law was never changed. The law today is the same as it was in 1937, 75%. Now, that how that works is every year in the Interior Appropriations Subcommittee, there is a rider that reduces the 75% to 50%. That rider is inserted every year. We have had conversations with Congressman DeFazio, Senator Wyden and Congressman Walden and others to omit inserting that reduction. And the reason I mention it and go into some detail, and forgive me for that, is that if you look at the last column, you can add 25% to that if we go back to 75%. So it almost puts your counties and your communities whole with what they're receiving today in the form of the safety net, if we get the Western Oregon Plan revision adopted. And that, of course, is the big if. We are now in the second year of the safety net, the reauthorization. And thank goodness for the hard work of the Oregon delegation nationally in that regard, particularly Senator Ron Wyden. Without his efforts with Senator Harry Reid of Nevada, we would be having a much different conversation here today. I'm reminded of the movie, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And the guys running to catch the train as it was leaving the station. Well, the train was leaving the station, and we were those guys. And fortunately, Ron slowed the train down just enough for us to get on it. Perhaps not a very good analogy because the guys catching the train were all convicts. But the point is, if you leave that point out, that we were those guys, you were those guys, as well as the other 39 states, 780 counties, and 4,400 school districts throughout the country that are impacted by this issue. And so there are certainly going to be conversations about the safety net. But the safety net ends not in 4 years now, because we're already in the second year. It ends in actually in 3 years, and there is nothing to take its place. At the end of the fourth year, we go back on receipts. That's why the four-year length of the safety net was so vitally important to give us the bridge to implement the plan, and that's what we're trying to do. And you've heard all of this. I know you've received an awful lot of statistics. And we would just simply ask, as has been, I think, asked before, that you consider a legislative resolution or something that represents the commitment of the legislature to move this issue forward, to get it implemented as soon as possible, so that Oregonians and Oregon can not only demonstrate that we can take care of our own forests, but that we can lead the way national forest management for the entire country. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Doug. For information, Senator Boquist and I are having a resolution drafted, and Senator Springer, or excuse me, Representative Springer is working on another one. It's very similar here. We'll make sure you get a copy. I want to acknowledge that I've got a written letter to enter into the record from Joseph Vail of the Oregon Heritage Forests Campaign. I'm not going to read it all, but I'm just for some highlights. Bold, in bold. BLM finalized Whopper despite broad public opposition. BLM finalized Whopper despite it being illegal. So not in favor of it. Just for the record, it's in your files, and it'll be in the record. One member of the public to go now. After Jim, from that sign-up sheet. So please, Jim Geisinger.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jim Geisinger. I work for Associated Oregon Loggers, which is a trade group representing over 1,000 family-owned logging companies and businesses associated with the logging industry. Appreciate the opportunity to testify this morning. Mr. Carrier said that the governor had three requests of the BLM and the administration, and that is to extend the comment period, delay the signing of the record of decision, and to provide time to work with the Obama administration and our own congressional delegation on the Whopper. What wasn't clarified, I don't think, very, very precisely, was that these requests came in the form of an appeal of this plan, an appeal to the Secretary of Interior. Two times in that letter, the governor suggested that we take up to 4 additional years to accommodate those 3 requests. That would make this planning period 9 years in length. 9 years to prepare a plan is expected to have a 10 to 15 year lifespan. That seems a little unreasonable to us. If the governor wants to have traction or get traction for this plan with the new administration, the way to do that is to support the plan, not raise questions about it. I would suggest that our Democratic-controlled legislature express support for this plan, and I would certainly suggest that our Democratic-dominated congressional delegation express support for this plan now and not to spend another 4 more years on process. I think Representative Wingard hit the nail on the head. This plan will be litigated. All plans get litigated. That's not a defeatist attitude. That's a fact of life. It's not hard to take a federal land management agency to court under the current rules and regulations that apply to those agencies today. I'd like to comment, too, on this issue of ESA consultation at the plan level versus at the project level. We have seen countless useless exercises where the regulatory agencies and the land management agencies consult at a plan level only to have appeals and litigation occur at the project level. We believe consulting at the plan level is a wasteful exercise. Let's get on with identifying what the real impacts are on the land when we begin implementing the plan revision. To kind of support our position on this issue, there was a Supreme Court case, federal Supreme Court case several years ago called Ohio Forestry. It had to do with a national forest plan in Ohio that was challenged by environmental groups saying that the environmental impact assessment of the plan was not adequate. The Supreme Court of the United States ruled that a plan is nothing but a stack of papers, that the action on the ground is what results in environmental impacts, and that's where the environmental assessment and impact should be addressed. Lastly, I'd like to talk briefly about what the plan actually does and what it proposes. We haven't talked about that at all this morning. Representative Hanna mentioned that the harvest level proposed is one half of what is growing every year. Between 1945 and about 1990, the BLM was selling 1 billion board feet per year every single year up until the spotted owl was listed and the Northwest Forest Plan was implemented. I think the BLM estimated they had about 50 billion board feet of inventory in 1945 when they started that harvest. Today, they believe they have something in the neighborhood of 70 billion board feet of timber. The stuff grows, and there's money growing on those trees, money that counties desperately need today. About one-third of the land is actually designated for timber production purposes. Over half is going to be set aside for fish, water, and wildlife. The riparian protection on our rivers greatly exceeds what's required under the Oregon Forest Practices Act. And the other thing I think is very significant on this issue of ESA consultation is all stands of timber over 160 years old will have no harvest activity for the next 15 years.
Which is the life of the plan.
And that is where most of our endangered species issues occur. So I don't see where the consultation issue is really a deal breaker in this process. So let me conclude by saying this is a very modest plan. The ONC Act has been interpreted by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, the most environmentally oriented circuit in our country, to be a dominant use act where timber production to support timber-dependent communities is the purpose of that act. And yet we're going to set half the land aside for fish, water, and wildlife, manage a third of it for timber, harvest half of what's being grown, and this is being characterized as a radical plan and a gift to the forest products industry. I really don't think so. It is quite modest. And let me conclude by making one observation, Mr. Chairman. I see many members of your committee utilizing copious amounts of tissue this morning to nurse their colds. Please note that this is a product of Georgia Pacific Corporation, a company that has a presence here in Oregon. They have two sawmills, one down in Quill, one in Philomath, that could greatly benefit by the implementation of the Western Oregon Plan revision. For the sake of the health of your committee, Mr. Chairman, please support the Western Oregon Plan revision.
You'll notice none of my committee members have attempted to go paperless either this session. Thank you, Jim. Representative Gilliam.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Jim, for being here. And you may want to comment on this, but I particularly want to ask our commissioner this question. I'd like you to touch again on the importance of timing here, and I just would predicate my question with this comment. if we could remove the appeal, and Mr. Carrier, again, thank you for staying with us this morning. I appreciate you being here. But if we could pull the appeal back from the governor's office today, if the heavens opened and all the lawyers in Oregon were taken, let me rephrase that. If something opened up and the lawyers were taken, and we implemented this plan, which Jim has pointed out what hammering out a plan means. It's the breadth of it, it's fairness. I mean, my question is on the timing. Aren't we late as it is to just hammer out the rules and the implementation for all the agencies that are going to be involved and all the local entities that are going to be involved to finally match up with the loss we know that's coming? You've already articulated it. The loss is coming. We're our last breath of the O&C monies. Talk more about that timing, and if we could get started today, where would we be?
If we could get started today,
Jim, Doug, one moment.
Excuse me.
You might make a friendly enhancement to your question, so I don't have to ask it too. Just really focus on really the other players involved, the administration, dollars given to BLM to implement it, and just so my question too is, how much is the appeal relevant to what happens from here, even if it were rescinded?
All of the appeals and proposed litigation are very relevant to the implementation of the plan, obviously. If there were no appeals, if the plan were in place today, estimates are between 3 and 4 years to ramp up the sales program and to encourage the various committees of jurisdiction at the federal level to fund the BLM to get to implementation of the entire plan. Could it be done sooner? Perhaps, but given the fact that we're going to be in litigation for a length of time, it is going to delay that process. There's no question about it. The 4 years that were provided in the safety net legislation deserve just a little bit of examination, because it again bears on your question. We are, in essence, in the second of those 4 years as we look at the 2009-2010 budget. The first year was 2008-2009. That was a 90% of the 2006 base that comes in the form of the safety net. 2009-2010 is going to be 81%. 2010-2011 is 73%. And in the fourth year of the safety net, there's a new formula applied. And the new formula involves population, unemployment, road miles, federal acreage, and a variety of other things. We don't know what that's going to be. Our estimate is it's going to reduce the income to the counties by way of the safety net by as much as 60%. So timing is absolutely critical. That's why we are encouraging everyone we can to get this plan implemented, so we can start producing a reasonable amount of timber and get not only the jobs and the economic activity in the community, but obviously resources to the county, so we can continue to provide the basic services we're responsible for. Timing is absolutely critical.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just supplement that briefly, I've talked to people in the Bureau of Land Management about how much timber they could put up this fiscal year if the Whopper was in place. Mr. Carrier suggested that one of the governor's concerns was the BLM's commitment to implementing the plan. Well, that's largely the responsibility of Congress to appropriate sufficient funds. But what the BLM's telling me was if the Western Oregon Plan revision was in place right now, with the money they have for this fiscal year, they could sell between 300 and 400 million board feet a ton. Now, that would have to be spending their money very efficiently and on cost-effective projects largely involving regeneration harvest, because that's the least expensive type of cell to put up. But between 300 and 400 million feet this fiscal year with their existing dollars. So I would suggest that the ramp may not be as steep as we might think it is if Congress provides the money that they need to implement the plan.
Speaks to, again, to our resolution and our to-do list for Congress that we'll be working on. Thank you, Representative Van Horn,
question? I'm in no better shape than Representative Schaffler. I apologize.
But you're tougher.
I hope so. Yeah, would you tell him that, please? One of the questions I have is about the market. And what does the market play currently, with the way things are, is that going to be a problem for timber?
The market's terrible right now. There's no question about that. But markets come and go. Most of the BLM's timber sale contracts are 2 to 3 years in length. So timber sales that are purchased today will likely not be harvested until 2011-2012. Our business has always been cyclical. That's not going to change. But it's in the best interest of the counties to have a sustained timber sale program and prosper when things are good and maybe not do as well when our markets aren't as good. We can't afford in the forest products industry just to shut down when the markets are down. We have fixed costs that have to be addressed. We have a workforce that we're trying to hold in some semblance of stability. And for the people I represent, that's particularly important, because when the landowners stop harvesting, they don't employ loggers. And loggers don't have great big egg nests stuffed away for a rainy day like a lot of the larger businesses do. Most of them operate from month to month, paycheck to paycheck. And when they stop working, they can't pay their bills. So we're looking for some stability, and we're certainly looking forward to better markets too, Representative Van Wormen.
Thank you.
Thanks. I've got two additional people on the sign-up sheets. I'd like to get to them. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
And then, Mike, I think if you would you like an opportunity to comment on some things that after we get it? So I've got Dave Moskowitz. Who's it? Ivan, are you my other member? Yeah, please. I don't have the sheet, but I've got lots of little sticky notes. For those of you here on the other bills, unlikely the first two, because they need amendments anyway. Last one, if we get to it, we'll carry over, but this is too important, so don't hold your breath, please. Thank you.
Hello, Chair Clem, members of the committee. My name is David Moskowitz, and I'm here today on behalf of Pacific Rivers Council and the Native Fish Society. There's handouts that are being passed around right now. One of them is a letter from the Native Fish Society to Governor Kulongowski. The other is a statement from Pacific Rivers Council about the reasons behind their challenge of this plan. I'd like to say right off the bat that both these groups support the governor's action appealing this plan at this time. And we think his reasons are valid. The letter from Pacific Rivers Council lays out a number of reasons why we believe the plan, as it's currently written and how it was put together, is insufficient to really move Oregon forward. I think that you've heard a lot of different testimony today, a lot of blasts from the past. If you've been working on this issue for a long time, we hear some of the same arguments, some of the same woes. Obviously, this has been a very controversial issue in this state. There's definitely seems to be a clear perception of winners and losers from the Northwest Forest Plan, and a lot of it is pointed at the rural communities are the ones that have lost in this case. I think what's not been discussed today by the industry is how the industry has changed in this state. There are a lot fewer jobs in this industry, but it's not necessarily tied completely or even in large part to environmental restrictions. The markets have changed, the mills have changed, technology has changed, and the people who are working in the woods. They're dealing with different equipment. There's modernization, and there have been huge job losses, but it's not accurate to assess those all to environmental risk regulations that may be put in place by the Northwest Forest Plan, by any of the Oregon's regulations, whether that be state forest management or the private management under the Forest Practices Act. There's a much, much more complex picture of that issue, and it hasn't been discussed today. One issue in terms that we don't see addressed here is really in the roads. This plan calls for about 1,200 miles more of new roads, and there are 14,000 miles of existing roads on these BLM lands that are not being sufficiently maintained. There isn't a very adequate overall road maintenance plan or operations plan, and these roads are contributing sediments to streams and to watersheds wherever they're found. This is a big issue. It's one of the perhaps long-term issues that comes from logging. Logging itself may have a short-term impact on resources, but the roads that are there, the failure to maintain culverts, the impassable culverts that are out there, they pose long-term threats to Oregon's watersheds and fish, and consequently to the industries that actually depend on healthy salmon streams. It's not a jobs versus environment issue. The environmental groups that I represent are not opposed to logging on federal lands, but they do oppose the way this plan was put together, and they also believe that this plan, the Whopper, which many of the speakers who have come up before have said this is going to be the salvation to the counties. Oregon is not going to solve the revenue problems that local governments and the state government faces on the backs of trees and fish and recreation and fishermen and many other people. You're not going to solve the county's problems, local problems on revenue, by cutting down the trees, because it's going to harm other aspects of the economy. There ought to be a much broader look at dealing with revenue. And I think Representative Van Orman mentioned the market conditions right now. You know, the state of the wood products industry is based on a national crisis with home building and home ownership and abuse of financial stability with the national markets. No one is building homes. There's not a need for the wood. And it's, as Mr. Geisinger said, it's an up-and-down industry. It comes and goes. And there's lead time involved, and that's all true. However, so to think that this plan, by rushing ahead with this plan, is going to solve that gap, is simply, it doesn't take into account the realities of the national markets. And I'm not an expert on that, but I do know that the jobs numbers that often get touted by the federal government are based on models that have not been updated nearly enough. When we've dealt with the number of jobs created per million board feet, the federal agencies often tout 12.7 jobs per million board feet. And that number is not based on reality. It's not based on how the industry has changed. So the thousands and thousands of jobs number, we ought to get to what is a real rational number. And I think we'd like to see that number, and we'd like to see it based on a current analysis of the industry and their techniques and how much volume is out there. We found out through working on the state forest project that the estimates of the amount of volume on the state lands was grossly overestimated, and it resulted in a higher number that was believed to be able to be harvested. And then that was multiplied by the number of jobs. We came up with this great target. Well, it's pie in the sky. And I can't believe that with all the economists that the state has and all the economists that the federal government has and all the foresters that are out there, that we can't come up with a better idea of what is growing out there, what is on the ground, and then actually how many jobs could be developed by a reasonable forest plan. I think there's folks out there that should have the answers to that. But I think that if we look at this as pie in the sky, we're all going to be disappointed. I think the realities are much more severe and striking. And I understand that, you know, even one job, if it's your job, is incredibly important. That's not lost on me as a small businessman. I'm going to leave it at that. I really appreciate the opportunity to testify at these informational hearings. Chair Clem, thank you.
Pleasure.
Chair Clem, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ivan Molesky. I'm with the Oregon Chapter Sierra Club. And I wasn't originally going to testify today, but I wanted to just throw out a few things that I think are important to remember that I didn't hear brought up earlier. One of the things is that there are implications to taking the BLM's 2.5 million plus acres out of the scientific framework of the Northwest Forest Plan. We don't know what consequences this is going to have for neighboring private lands that also have endangered species obligations, or the Elliott State Forest, for example, that has been discussed here. If you remove significant amounts of critical habitat for spotted owls or impact salmon and steelhead negatively through this change in the BLM plans, it very well could have implications on private and state lands, and I think that's something that the timber industry has not necessarily talked about, but is a very real situation. I do want to point out a couple of other things. According to the Oregon Department of Forestry, between 2006 and 2007, private landowners in Oregon who produce the bulk of our timber, by and large, reduced their cut by over 500 million board feet in those years. That's a 15% reduction by the private industry voluntarily, not because of environmental restrictions. Those were due to market conditions. In that same period of time, the federal government increased their cut 7% despite market conditions. Incidentally, that 500 million board foot reduction exceeded the total cut on federal lands in Oregon that year. And I think that's significant because if the timber industry is calling for more federal logs, I have to ask the question, why are they reducing the cut on their own lands? In addition to this, in December, USA Today, and it was actually they were reporting a story that originally appeared, I believe, in the Salem Statesman Journal. They reported that production at Western Mills fell for the second straight year to the lowest annual volume in a decade. Prices for lumber are at historic lows. Ray Wilkerson of the Oregon Forest Industries Council was quoted as saying, "This is the worst we've ever seen. It's just impossible right now to even move lumber products. The markets have almost seized up." So I would say that given this economic context within which this plan has been finalized by the Bush administration, I think there is time to ask those questions and try to forge a compromise that is based on people working together for a solution that can actually be sustainable. I think that what the administration has proposed here is not going to work out for the long term. I think that there are opportunities and there is time to talk about a common sense alternative to what has been proposed by making sure that we're not reducing, salmon protections by 50% as this plan would, and we're moving forward with a much more diverse way of restoring these forests and dealing with these issues. Lastly, I just want to say that the Whopper is moving forward. There's already been timber sales proposed. One near Coos Bay would propose 1,400 acres of new clear-cut logging on public lands. However, in the same area, just last month, due to market conditions, a project failed for the second time to get any bids, a 6 million board foot project. So again, I would urge you that I recognize that there is a sense of urgency in this building to solve the state's financial woes. I do not think you can realistically look at the BLM forests or forests in general right now as the solution for that problem, and I think we need to look more long term. Thank you very much.
Thank you for testimony. Questions for these witnesses, and at some point I'd like to get Mike back up to answer questions too. Professor Gilley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To our representative, and I apologize, from Sierra Club, I didn't get your name.
Ivan Molesky.
Ivan?
Yes.
It's easier that way. Are you a Leno or Letterman man?
I like them both, actually. I appreciate Letterman.
Follow up?
Yes, please. I'm fascinated to know where this is going.
Letterman has a tree farm.
Thank you for that enhancement.
For some unknown reason, I still stay up at least for the top 10 list. And I'm sorry, but you and Mr. Letterman just can't let go of Mr. Bush. I know there's a lot of humor there, but you got to let go of that. And we have to not politicize this. So that's my caution. This plan has been in place long before I arrived in this building, and I have a lot of respect for the work on all sides that have gone into it. So please don't minimize the plan or politicize it.
talk about hammering it out. Talk about trying in a very difficult atmosphere to balance in this state. This plan, and up until recently, had the fingerprints of everybody, including the governor, on it to do something good. So that's a caution. Mr. Markowitz, I just have to challenge your choice of words. You talk about reality. You use the word rushing, and that's the last word I would use to the work that's gone into this plan. So I just hope you're not confusing salvation. Nobody that I heard talking, either side, thinks that this is the salvation. But don't confuse salvation with the decency to reach out to people who are hurting, who aren't in Salem, who fortunately had a voice this morning from Douglas County. You and I are here because we care about Oregon, but the lights are on. I'm getting paid. You're getting paid. And we've got a great opportunity to have the lights on and lunch today. But it's that bad. If you don't know that, and apologize, I'm apologizing to you if you do, if you've been there, then go down there to the counties that were represented this morning and some that weren't. I guess there's no question there. Thank you for the chance to comment on it.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. Governor's Natural Resource Advisor, I'd like to come back up for some response. I think I've got maybe an additional question or two as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, for the record, I'm Michael Carrier, Governor Kulongoski's Natural Resources Policy Director. I just want to make a couple of comments. If it would appear that I was sidestepping Representative Wingard's questions about how many rural jobs has the governor created on his watch, it's because I'm his Natural Resources Policy Advisor, not his Economic Policy Advisor, and I would encourage the committee to invite, and I will encourage my cohorts to attend, our Economic Revitalization Team Director Ray Knapp and folks from our Office of Economic Development to come and talk to you about the number of rural jobs that have been created in the last 6 years, not timber jobs necessarily, because the goal has been to diversify those economies and offer opportunities where they exist, but they have now progressively worked with our communities to attract new economic opportunities, and they have quantified the numbers, so if you're interested, I'm sure they can provide that data for you. Secondly, Mr. Molesky clarified something that I think is important to note. The Whopper is in effect. When the director, the Assistant Secretary of Interior, signed those records of decision associated with the plan in December, that replaced the old plan for the ONC lands with the Western Oregon plan revision. That plan is currently in effect, and it's being operationalized. There is no stay issued by the courts or any request for injunctive relief that would suspend that plan. As of yet, there is none. And I want to clarify that the governor's appeal is not a legal appeal. It's an administrative appeal under the APA, and it is not afforded some opportunity to request a stay or delay in the implementation of this plan. The 1,400 acres of regeneration harvests that are currently being advertised by the Bureau in the Coos Bay District, and there's 200 acres of thinning projects that are on 50 different sites that the BLM has just advertised, reflect the fact that the Whopper is being operationalized. The issue here that the governor is trying to make is, good luck, you know, we hope you're successful, but based on history, we'd like to revisit this issue a year from now and see what progress has been made. You know, have those been held up through litigation, appeal, and other legal challenges, or were they actually accomplished to the benefit of communities? So that's the very point that he's trying to make here. The one representation that Mr. Geisinger made that I want to clear up is that the governor's reference to we have 4 years or delaying this for four more years, that's not an accurate representation. I want to quote from the governor's letter. He said, now that we have secured a reauthorization of the Secure Rural Schools Safety Net payment for 4 years, it's imperative that we continue to work together to secure the adoption and implementation of a final management plan for the ONC lands that within that four-year time frame. The same thing that Mr. Robertson was saying. We've got to get this implemented in the next 4 years because the governor is painfully aware that these Secure Rural School payments are shrinking year to year and they will expire in 4 years and are not likely to come back. He goes on to say that this will require continuing efforts to ensure that the plan, when finalized, can be implemented free of legal challenges and deliver the healthier forest and sustainable harvest yields that we've been seeking since the enactment of the Northwest Forest Plan. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Carrier. Couple quick questions. Are you able to give me an assurance the governor's not going to join as a party in a lawsuit against the Whopper at this point, that the administrative appeal is the avenue he's taken?
Representative Clem, I cannot answer that question because we have not had that discussion with the governor or with his legal counsel.
Do you think you'd have the opportunity to have it at some point and get back to me privately at least on that so I can inform folks?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Other questions?
Well, just to, Mr. Chair,
yes,
follow up on that. Will the governor seek an injunction to halt the Whopper?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, that is same the question answer. That the chair just asked that I cannot answer.
But you'll get back to me.
Yes.
Thank you, and I'll let you know. Representative Krieger.
I don't know if there's any question, but comments. Excuse me for being gone so long. But we're involved with the Coos Bay Railroad thing. Kind of distressed of some of the things I hear because I've heard them for the last 20 years on forestry issues. It hasn't changed. It's the same people suing. It's the same people wanting marine reserves. It's the same people always, and I call them the cave people, citizens against virtually everything. And I got criticized for that when I said that to some people, but that's what they do. They stop everything. Just a couple of things. I came in, I heard about 11 jobs, a million feet. I wish I could get a million feet of lumber out for with 11 jobs into the mill. I don't think I could in Curry County. I would have liked to ask Ivan if he's ever testified in favor of cutting trees. If he said, yeah, I am today, well, how about increasing the cut of trees? I don't know what we'd hear. If he could show that he's gone in and done that. The other thing is, you know, the litigation that comes out of there is done for one reason. It's to stop, delay, and the number one thing is to increase costs. So it costs more to bring that federal timber to market, therefore the profitability is down, and then they say, well, it's not profitable, it's above cost, and we shouldn't be doing it if that. Well, it's the litigation and some of the environmental wackoism that's out there that's causing this to be above cost. And you've heard probably throughout the day, I bet you from almost everyone that's testified, that there's mistrust and mistrust on both sides. I don't see anybody coming forward to make that go away or reduce it. We heard earlier that the plan is going to harvest approximately half of the growth of that forest. Well, what does that tell you? The forest on the average is going to get older. When it gets older, it becomes habitat for endangered species. Then the endangered species start occupying the older forest, which is a bigger percentage of the forest, and your cut eventually will come down because they will litigate.
Thank you, Representative Krieger. I think we're done with you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So I'm going to make an announcement that we're going to carry over House Bills 2082, 2212, and 2213. A, we're missing members. B, I'm not in the mood at this point, actually, to analyze them. But what I do want to say about partisanship, about trust, it's very easy to take shots at people. You know, both parties have controlled the legislature in the last 20 years. Both parties controlled Congress in the last 20 years. Very easy to do it. Frankly, I don't care what has happened today. The question is, what can we do going forward? I wouldn't have held this hearing. You know, most of you are not the benefits of getting to read the letters we send to each other. So I'll read to you a letter I sent as the chair of this committee to my colleagues. Dear colleagues, some of you may have heard some distant rumblings throughout the fall or just as the new year began about the Whopper. It's not Burger King's latest press ploy. It's actually the WOPR, the BLM's Western Oregon Plan Revision, and it represents the best opportunity in years to bring some reasonable balance to our ONC timberlands. These are lands that are constitutionally mandated to be managed in order to provide revenues for our rural counties, since the federal government owns so much property within them and on which it doesn't pay any property taxes. These are also the same lands that, after much wrangling and false starts, caused us to receive what is likely one final set of payments under the Secure Rural Schools Act program to give us time to find another way to fund these counties. The WOPR won't solve that problem entirely, as it's designed to protect old growth by not allowing trees 160 years or older to be harvested during the entire duration of the plan. Increase current streamside setbacks by moving the standard to one average tree length versus the lowest current minimum of 50 feet. Ensure forest health by focusing 65% of the harvest on thinning projects.
It will, however, when fully implemented, replace between 75 to 85% of the revenues counties will be losing while creating 1,200 jobs and saving up to 3,800 more. And that's a good start that Oregon can and must take now. In close to some additional information about the decision the BLM made, the governor's appeal on several process points, but not the harvest levels in the plan, and the agency's response to help inform you of the current status of the plan. And it goes on to invite people to join us to this for this meeting. Our intent is to strategize today on how to move forward with implementing the already adopted plan and in a way that maximizes the benefits for our rural communities while respecting principles of sustainability and honoring our uniquely Oregon value of utilizing our natural resources in a renewable fashion that promotes forest health. Now, when it comes to farming or agriculture, obviously I'm engaged in it professionally. My wife's family's been doing it for 100 years. When it comes to timber, it has nothing to do with my district, has nothing to do with political calculations. It's the place that I grew up and was devastated. My parents lost their jobs. My friends' parents, people killed themselves. So there is no point in pointing fingers at anyone. It's about how we go forward. Thank you. The committee is adjourned.
The fact of the matter is, they don't care.